Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
On day one, we will begin giving you a government that's open, accountability, and ready to get taxes and spending under control. Day one will mark the beginning of the end of the vicious property tax cycle, driving so many families and businesses away from this state.
Eliot Spitzer from his victory speech last night. But even at 81%, it was only a victory in his party's primary. Now the race begins against the actual Republican nominee, John Faso, the former assemblyman from Kinderhook, south of Albany, who was Assembly Minority Leader. You also may remember he lost to Alan Hevesy for state controller as the Republican nominee in 2002. John Faso, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, thank you very much. Nice to speak to you and your listeners.
First, your reaction to Eliot Spitzer's win and his 81%.
Well, it was 81%, but it was only 15% of the total Democratic Party electorate. So I think that when people have a chance to compare the views and the proposals of both candidates, I think this is going to be a very competitive race because Eliot Spitzer, number one, is going to raise taxes, and number two, he's not all he's cracked up to be as Attorney General. He's pursued a lot of, in my view, phony cases using inappropriate tactics, while at the same time he wasn't going after Medicaid fraud, which actually cost taxpayers billions of dollars. So I think that the Spitzer record is not really one that it appears to be to many people. And number two, I can guarantee you, with all the spending promises he's made, day one, he's going to be increasing taxes.
We'll talk about the taxes question in some detail, but aren't you going to have a hard time convincing New Yorkers that Eliot Spitzer wasn't a good attorney general with the things they know that he did do?
Well, but there are things he did that they don't really know about. I'll give you an example. This Grasso case, he's going after the compensation, which was obviously an outlandish compensation package.
The head of the New York Stock Exchange.
Yes, but, I mean, the Stock Exchange is not the widows and orphans home, which is the Attorney General might normally look into the affairs of a not-for-profit organization, which the Stock Exchange was then, but is no longer. It's now converted to a public company. But, Brian, ask yourself this question. If he were to win this case, who does the money go to? It goes back to the stock exchange. It doesn't go to taxpayers or shareholders. And indeed, the state taxpayers are going to have to pay millions of dollars back to Grasso for the taxes he paid on that money. So why is this case in the public interest? The other issue is Medicaid. He has simply not met the test. It wasn't as glamorous. It wasn't as glitzy. He didn't get the headlines. And so he didn't go there. And yet billions of dollars, according to the New York Times and others, have been wasted in terms of fraud and mistaken billings because New York's Medicaid system is wildly out of control. When you compare it to other states, we spend twice the national average. We have 8% of the recipients. We spend 15% of the dollars. It is just simply an area which he failed on. And so those are the issues. The Hank Greenberg case is another one. You saw last week he backpedaled on that case again after really breaching his obligation of legal ethics by going on national TV and accusing him of a crime before he even offered the first proof in court. And then, of course, 5 months later, the day after Thanksgiving last year, he said, oh, well, no bother. We're not going to bring criminal charges. So, I mean, it's an outrage, the stuff that he's done, smearing and besmirching people's reputations in order to get a headline. I think it's his record really leaves a lot to be desired.
Just briefly on the stock exchange, as important an institution as the New York Stock Exchange is, might it not have been worth some of the taxpayers' money to shine a light on that compensation and the way that organization was being run?
the plain and simple fact of the matter is no. It doesn't benefit New York State taxpayers in the least. It has no benefit to the state taxpayers. This was not the widows and orphans home. This was the New York Stock Exchange, and I would also tell you that this was a headline grab for Mr. Spitzer, and there's no benefit to the taxpayers of New York State. He hasn't even said how much this case is costing the taxpayers to prosecute.
Is there benefit to the shareholders? And it certainly causes some dissonance to think that the New York Stock Exchange was a not-for-profit institution, but that, of course, is the umbrella organization that kind of houses the place where all these deals get done. But where the shareholders, does this trickle down to the shareholders?
It's even though the compensation package was enormous and in my view out of bounds, there's no meaningful shareholder benefit whatsoever. I mean, I think certain third basemen get overcompensated too, but that doesn't mean the Attorney General should be looking into that.
I guess you don't mean David Wright. This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC, WNYC.org. Republican gubernatorial candidate John Faso, my guest on this day after Elliot Spitzer officially romped his way over Tom Suozzi to the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. We will take phone calls for John Faso this morning, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I know that taxes and spending are at the heart of your campaign. Talk about them.
Well, New Yorkers are overtaxed. I mean, we spend, our taxpayers pay 53% above the national average in state and local taxes. If you make $40,000 adjusted gross income in New York State and you're a married couple, you're taxed at the highest tax rate. Our property taxes are about 60% above the national average. Workers' compensation is 72% above the national average. Let me just put that one in context. People have heard about the population loss in New York State, particularly upstate, and how we're not growing. We're going to lose another two congressional seats in 4 years because New York State as a whole isn't growing relative to the nation. In Buffalo, for instance, there's a company called Curtis Screw. Curtis Screw has half of their employees, 500 or so, in North Carolina, half in Buffalo. Their workers' comp premium in Buffalo is $1 million a year. In North Carolina, it's $150,000 a year. This is making it a tremendous disincentive for jobs for people, for employers to bring, especially manufacturing and other type of jobs like that, here in New York State to grow them. And this affects not just people upstate, it affects people and employers in Brooklyn and Long Island and throughout the metropolitan area. New York, simply our system, we pay among the lowest benefits in the nation, and we have the highest costs. So it's if we adopted some reforms that I have proposed and that Governor Pataki, for instance, have proposed, and Democrats and Republicans have proposed in the legislature, we could lower costs and raise benefits for workers. Mr. Spitzer, he won't even tell us what his position is. He just says vaguely, oh, we want to reform it. It's like he treats the voters that they're on a need-to-know basis. Like he will only bother to tell us specifically where he stands on these issues when he gets around to it. Coronate him, make him the governor, and then he'll get around to handling these murky details.
So let me ask you specifically on taxes and spending, how you think your proposals would be different than Spitzer's, and I'm going to replay the clip that we opened the hour with from his acceptance speech last night. And when he gave his list of what he would do on day one as governor, here's the one he put first.
On day one, we will begin giving you a government that's open, accountability, and ready to get taxes and spending under control. Day one will mark the beginning of the end of the vicious property tax cycle driving so many families and businesses away from this state.
So it sounds like you both got the same issues. Why is your approach better?
Well, for instance, what does Mr. Spitzer propose on property taxes, which, again, is not the issue in New York City, but is the paramount issue outside of New York City all around the state? His proposal is to just increase the so-called star exemption and give people more exemption. My proposal is to put a cap on how much school taxes can go up. Number two, create significant mandate relief so the school districts can operate within the cap. And by mandate relief, I mean not dictating every aspect of how they negotiate contracts, pay benefits, build buildings, buy goods and services, all these things which add to costs without improving education. And number three, I would double the STAR exemption over a four-year period. So we both are talking about increasing the STAR exemption significantly, but only my proposal gets to the, what is driving up school spending, and that is the mandates and no cap. School taxes have gone up 45% in 5 years in New York State. Within 2 years, everyone will be paying more money under Spitzer's plan than they are today. So his proposal is just simply more of the same. The other thing, Brian, he said is that, oh, he's going to change the culture in Albany. Well, the culture in Albany, he's already ethically challenged in the way he's conducted his campaign. He just took, and this is the point is that he has one set of rules for Elliot Spitzer and then another set of rules for everyone else. He just, for instance, took a $40,000 gift from a lobbyist who is trying to bring an out-of-state Indian tribe into New York State to build a casino, and this same lobbyist is part of one of these groups trying to take over the racing franchise in New York State. Hey, he's entitled to do that. The lobbyist is entitled to do those things. But Spitzer should put on his form, on his disclosure, that he got a $40,000 plane ride. Instead, he tells the voters, oh, it was only worth $4,300. Spitzer has taken $500,000 and counting from this particular guy or money that he has raised for him. And he says, oh, he's not going to be business as usual. He's not going to be pay to play. Well, it's an outrage that he's done this.
Well,
and
I know that.
This is the same guy who did the same thing with his running mate earlier this year. So it's like they are so arrogant in terms of their behavior, they even commit the same unethical deeds with the same guy, and it's only months apart.
I know that that story was reported in the New York Sun. It was trumpeted on the Wall Street Journal editorial page today.
Today, yeah.
I haven't heard yet Elliot Spitzer's response to that, so the next time he comes on, we'll get his version of that. But when you talk about the economy, when you talk about property taxes upstate, when you say that Governor Pataki has some ideas for reform
on workers' comp
that Spitzer hasn't embraced or didn't do anything about as Attorney General, by many accounts, Governor Pataki has been such a big failure for the upstate economy that a lot of people who used to tend to vote Republican now say, well, gosh, I'm going to give the other party a try. What do you say to those folks?
Well, I think that there is definitely 40 years of blame on both sides that could to go around for the condition of the upstate economy and also for the tax burden New Yorkers face. There's no one party has a lock on virtue in this regard. New Yorkers are overtaxed, and the New York State government overspends, and both Republicans and Democrats are responsible for it. There's no way to get around that, and I'm not trying to say otherwise. All what I'm saying is that this is the first time in 24 years it's an open seat for governor with no incumbent running. Mr. Spitzer is acting as though he should just be coronated, and let's not even bother with the election. He won't debate me in New York City. Imagine that, Brian. He's agreed to debate me up in Ithaca at Cornell and in Buffalo, both on public TV. He refuses to debate me in New York City on a broadcast network so people can have him challenged. Why should he walk into this job without being subjected to the same scrutiny that anyone else should be? Again, it's one set of standards for Elliot Spitzer and another set for everyone else.
It's funny about where people debate. It was an issue the opposite way with Swazi during the primary. We have to break in 30 seconds. But, you know, it seems to me if the broadcast goes statewide on radio or television in this day and age of electronics, why does it matter if you guys are physically located in Ithaca or in Park Slope?
Well, to a degree, you're right. But on the other hand, why is he going only on public television? Because public television isn't as widely watched as if it was a traditional network. And I hate to say that on your public broadcasting station, Brian.
We're secure in our listenership.
But we're secure in your listenership. One great thing about your listenership, that virtually every one of them is a voter, and that's why I'm so glad to be talking with you this morning.
And we'll continue and let John Faso, the Republican candidate for governor, talk to some of our voter listeners. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll get into some specific New York City issues with them, too, in a minute.
This will not be upstate versus downstate, urban versus rural, business versus labor, Republican versus Democrat. To realize the reform that we seek, it will take every single New Yorker, no matter what you look like, where you came from, or what you believe in, working together towards a common good and a common purpose.
Eliot Spitzer asking New Yorkers to go beyond partisanship, assuming he gets is elected to be the next governor of New York. And our guest is the Republican and Conservative Party candidate, John Faso. What do you think about that tone, Mr. Faso? And some people say that one of the reasons you may not get elected is that you're just too conservative for New York State in 2006, given your views on social issues and some other things.
I don't agree.
Go ahead.
Give me an example.
Abortion?
Well, I've always said that I'm pro-life, but I also acknowledge that the law is not going to change regardless of who is governor. I do support things like parental notification for minors. You know, they just passed a law in New York said that's New York State that says that a minor can't go into a tanning parlor without parental permission. So I think that an issue like parental notification, actually, most people support my point of view.
Gay rights?
I'm against gay marriage, but I'm open to civil unions. I voted, in fact, I was one of the first Republicans way back in 93 in the legislature to support the non-discrimination bill for gays and lesbians. So my position is remarkably closer to Hillary Clinton's than it is to Mr. Spitzer's.
Guns? We have an uptick in gun violence, according to the Justice Department's latest report.
I hadn't seen that report. I did notice the 64-year-old grandmother, though, in Harlem the other day, who was able to defend herself from her robber attacker because she had a licensed handgun. I thought that was an interesting situation. But the gun laws are reasonable in New York State, and I don't foresee any changes in that regard. We have among the strictest laws in New York State anywhere in the country.
All right. Since you're not that well-known...
And for instance, I've said... and propose that anyone convicted of a crime using an illegal handgun or a handgun in the course of a crime have a mandatory 10-year sentence.
Since you're not that well-known to much of our downstate audience, I want to go through a short list of issues and get you on the record for the benefit of those listeners.
Sure.
Not a yes or no lightning round, but if you could answer each of these questions in about a minute pertaining to New York City or downstate issues, all right?
Yeah.
How would you comply with the court ruling on the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit? How much more per year would you propose to spend on city schools? Spitzer has said $4 to $6 million.
Yeah, $4 to $6 billion, he said.
Billion, I'm sorry.
And the problem with his proposal is that extended statewide, you're looking at $8 to $12 billion statewide for all the districts. That would mean about a 30% income tax increase statewide, which is not affordable. What my proposal would be to, number one, streamline the existing school aid formula, drive additional resources to high-need districts, particularly in the urban areas and some of the districts in the rural areas, but make sure that any additional money is accounted or is accompanied by accountability standards and performance standards so that we know what we're getting. If money alone, and this is my fundamental problem with the CFE proponents, if money alone were the solution, we'd already have the finest educational system. We spend the second highest of all the states per capita on K through 12 education. So we've got to get more for the money we're spending today before we put more money into the existing system. And that's why I was the original sponsor in the state legislature of charter schools, because I want to create choice and competition in public education.
Next question. What would be your top priorities for development in New York City, and how do you think that would differ from your opponent?
For development.
Spitzer has...
Well, I think that the key in terms of what state government can do is I think we need to make sure that the MTA is a efficient and well-functioning organization. I have long been a proponent of taking the sales tax money that people pay on gasoline, $600 million, which now goes into the general fund, and using that for transit and road projects throughout our state and city. The state and the city over the years have diminished the amount of operating aid that they have provided to the MTA, and that has meant that the MTA has been really forced into too heavy a debt situation, and that has put pressure on the fare, but it has also meant that enormous amounts of ongoing current expenses have to be paid just for debt service and not for operations.
Quick follow-up. What's your position on the Atlantic Yards project in Brooklyn? As governor, you would have some power. The Empire State Development Corporation is involved in that. Would you change direction of that at all?
I might want to tinker with it around the edges, but I think fundamentally the project is a sound one.
Mayor Bloomberg has vowed to reduce the 19% official poverty rate in New York City, as you know, and he has decided that job creation is not enough. What would you do as governor to fight poverty in New York besides create jobs?
Well, I'm not so sure. I think the key is a healthy private sector economy, because as John F. Kennedy said, a rising tide lifts all boats. But I do think that one of the big pressures here is affordable housing, and so that there are programs that have been used in places like California where banks, insurance company, and investment funds put together capital that can be leveraged with government to develop more affordable housing for middle-income workers in New York City and in our metropolitan areas, in areas like Long Island. It's vitally important that we retain the middle class. And so those are issues that I would be very happy and very anxious to work on. I think, though, the key is that we have to make sure we have private sector involvement, and there are some reforms in terms of the workers' comp system and the so-called scaffolding law, which would lower the cost of construction in New York City and around the state. Changing the scaffolding law, for instance, would lower the rebuilding costs of downtown by tens of millions of dollars. Mr. Spitzer, he won't tell people where he stands on that issue.
You mentioned affordable housing. Do you support the rent stabilization law as is, or what would you change?
I support it as is.
And a downstate issue that's not a New York City issue, do you support Suffolk County's proposed crackdown on illegal immigrant employment that opponents criticize as too harsh?
I think that we have to look at it. I think that there's a rationale for what Suffolk County is doing. The most important thing I think we have to do is we have to have the federal government enforce the borders and the immigration system, and we also need to have the federal government have a tamper-proof Social Security identification system so that employers know when they're hiring someone and they're presented with information as to their Social Security number that it's valid. And that's really a national issue, and it's less conducive to effective solution at the county level.
Republican gubernatorial candidate John Faso, my guest on WNYC, ready to talk to some, as the pollsters would call them, likely voters.
Sure. And Brian, I should mention to you that also, you know, I live upstate, but I grew up downstate in Nassau County. In fact, my father, his family lived for 30 years at 266 Elizabeth Street in Lower Manhattan. My mother went to Julia Richmond High School in Manhattan. My father graduated from Newtown High School in Elmhurst, and he lived in Corona. So, I mean, my roots are downstate, and I went to high school in New York City in Queens, Archbishop Molloy. So I bridged the upstate-downstate divide, I think, pretty well.
93.9 AM 820 WNYC, our phone number 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or you can email questions for John Faso to Brian Larashow at WNYC.org. Bill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I really did appreciate Elliot Spitzer and his investigations of how the stock exchange works. I think it's important because, first of all, a significant part of New York City's economy is the operations of the stock exchange, the amount of money that the city gets from the stock exchange through taxes, but also the amount of jobs that are produced. So anything that I think threatens that, the image of the operations of the market, really does reflect on the economy of New York City. The other thing is that I think that everybody knows that most pension systems in the United States are invested in the market, and that if the market is perceived to be crooked in any way, and certainly the compensation that the market director was going to get was really crooked, it really does shake the foundation of the market. And I for one, my pension's backed up by most of by a good part of the market. I for one don't want to see people lose trust in the market and threaten pension systems all over the United States.
Mr. Faso?
Well, I think that I have a different take on it than the caller, but I think he's right in terms of the impact of the market on New York City. And that's why I think some of Mr. Spitzer's prosecutions have really been misguided, because I think that they have, for instance, in the case of AIG, public pensions have a lot of money invested in companies like AIG. How much did those public pension funds take a hit on the stock loss because of the threat of Spitzer to criminally indict AIG and Mr. Greenberg, a company that he built? And it's very interesting. Mr. Spitzer seems to go after self-made people. Hank Greenberg grew up on a dairy farm in Sullivan County, and he built that company. And to have,
but he might have also had crooked deals. Breaking the law is not offset by the fact that, well, you made the company, therefore you can break the law.
Well, there's no allegation of criminality. In fact, after Spitzer goes on national TV and accuses Hank Greenberg of being a crook, by which he violated his legal ethics, by the way, he didn't put the first paper in court to prove that allegation. And then the day after Thanksgiving, well after the headlines have receded, he announces, oh, by the way, no criminal indictment against AIG or against Mr. Greenberg. And then just last week, he pulls back again on two out of the six, two of the most prominent civil charges against Greenberg. So the problem is that Spitzer is a public official who seems to be more imbued with believing his own press releases and going after people who get headlines, and then months later or years later, the case goes away.
And
it's just like the Bank of America case. He brought this, finally got this underling, he brought him to trial, and he was acquitted on 29 out of the 33 counts, and the jury was hung on the other four.
Let me get to some other callers. We, of course, will give Elliot Spitzer a chance to defend himself on these charges by John Fassler.
That's if he comes on your show, Brian.
Well, he's come on in the past, so we hope he'll come on in the future. Gene in Ossining, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gene.
Yes, hello, Brian.
Hi.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Fasso.
Hi, Gene.
Hello. I am a permanently disabled workers' comp recipient.
Yep.
Who's really tired of having to fight for the medical care that I need. And I heard you say before that you were going to reduce premiums and increase benefits, and I'd like to know how you plan to do that.
Well, one of the issues is one that most other states have done, which they have a limit on what's called permanent partial disability, and that may be something that Jean is very familiar with. I can't comment on her case because I'm not familiar with it, but nor would it be appropriate on the air. But the fact of the matter is that over 40 states have limits on permanent partial disability of 500 weeks.
Rid of these people, what do you plan to do with them?
It's not a question of getting rid of people. There's a permanent Social Security disability system. New York is one of the only states in the nation that has this, and what it does, it means that employers are finding it too expensive to stay in New York State, and therefore jobs for employees are not here, and that's why people are leaving.
Thanks for your call, Gene. Coming up in 5 minutes, by the way, some business news. Apple vies for your living room, not just your desktop, while HP and Dell are up against the firewall. We'll look at such big news in the last week for all three of the companies that put most of the computer equipment in our homes. Dennis in Long Beach, you're on WNYC with John Fasso. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. Mr. Fasso, thank you very much for taking my call as well. One of the concerns here in Long Beach, obviously, are taxes, and have been for quite some time. But one of my concerns as a Democrat is down here, specifically in Long Beach and in Nassau County, we've had Republicans promise us no new taxes or tell us that they're going to cut taxes. And at the end of the day, after they have taken office and done what they sought out to do, they, in fact, put us in greater fiscal jeopardy by borrowing money or by playing with the books, so to speak, for lack of a better term. And I'm wondering now, through your campaign, are you going to identify specific areas of spending which you intend to cut?
Well, that's a very good question, Dennis. That's one of the reasons why I've asked for debates with Mr. Spitzer in every region of the state, so that we can be, these questions can be put to us. If you go on my website at johnfasso.com, you will see, for instance, a very specific plan on Medicaid reform. And what I've proposed to the Medicaid system is that we could save taxpayers $13 billion over a four-year period by cracking down on fraud, where we're getting ripped off like crazy. And this is, again, one of my problems with Spitzer. He wasn't going after that fraud because there weren't the headlines in getting the pharmacy that might have been ripping off $700,000 or the Medicaid mill that was over-prescribing or billing for procedures that were never performed. He didn't get headlines doing that, so he wasn't doing it. And so we could save $13 billion over 4 years out of that Medicaid system. Now, if you think of that, what does $13 billion mean in the Medicaid system? Well, that's about 6 or 7% of the total cost that would be spent over that period, or actually it's about double that. It's about 12% of the total cost that would be spent over that period in the Medicaid system by fraud prevention, by changing the incentives in the system that currently exist. A physician, for instance, many physicians won't even see a Medicaid patient in their office because the reimbursement levels don't even justify turning on the lights in the office to see the patient.
So patients
go to emergency rooms where it costs us thousands of dollars more. So I propose that we increase reimbursements to physicians, and we also enhance community health centers in our medically underserved rural and urban areas around the state. And I've got a specific program, and it's right in my website, Dennis, and you can see it. So a lot of the money we're spending now, whether it's in education or whether it's in the Medicaid system, is not being spent efficiently and effectively. And that's the major place where I'm going to cut.
Dennis, thank you. Kate in Harlem, you're on WNYC with John Faso. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for your program.
Thank you.
My question is, you know, I'm a former public school teacher and currently a professor of education. And what I really want to question is what you said earlier about the campaign for fiscal equity.
Yes.
I mean, how can you justify your statement that public schools have been adequately funded when the per pupil expenditures, meaning, you know, the amount of money that we spend on each kid annually, in places like Scarsdale has historically been thousands of dollars more than in places like the South Bronx, you know, and I just, in asking that, I also just want to encourage you to spend some time in a poor school to see what it's really like and what kind of conditions that we're working with before you can make a claim that we have leveled the playing field because we haven't, the money's desperately needed, and I want to know how you respond to that.
Okay, and okay, Kate, thank you. And Mr. Faso, I want to say that we have a minute left for that, and anything else you want to say as we conclude our first and I hope not last interview of this campaign.
I'll come back anytime. Kate, it's a good question. The question you have to deal with is, yes, the Scarsdales and the Manhassets and Great Necks are spending thousands of dollars more because they are voluntarily taxing themselves more. If you look at the school aid formula from Albany, you'll find that the school aid formula is actually paying much less per child from state taxes for those school districts than it would in the urban area. I'm not saying that all the money is well spent, and I'm certainly not saying that we're getting the results that we need, particularly in some of the hard-pressed urban and rural schools. But what I am saying is that money alone is not the answer. It has to be a combination of things, and you have to have accountability, and you have to have a performance evaluation in terms of looking at what are we getting for the money.
And that has to be the last word
This
time.
Very good.
John Faso, Republican and Conservative Party nominee for governor of New York. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Brian, and thanks to your listeners.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, all three of the major computer makers in the news this week. We'll see what's going on with Apple, HP, and Dell. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.